Hare Krishna. Today we are observing the feast day of Nrisimha Chaturdashi. Chaturdashi means 14th day of the waxing moon. That's the appearance day of Lord Nrisimhadev, which is actually on Tuesday. It's coming Tuesday. Today is the Dwadashi, day after Ekadashi, the 12th day. But because it's Sunday, we are here on Sunday because people are more available. And Wednesday is the Purnima, the full moon. So Nrisimha was born one day, not born, but appeared one day before the full moon. So it is celebrated at the same time. All the appearance days in the Vaishnava calendar are celebrated according to the lunar calendar, not the Western calendar. Lunar calendar is always accurate. Okay, so I listened to a few recordings of Srila Prabhupada, my guru, speaking on Nrisimha Chaturdashi festival. So I am endeavoring to take my inspiration from our founder, Acharya Prabhupada. Thank you, Prabhu. Here in the material world, we have an eternal struggle. And it is the struggle between good and evil. It is the struggle between the spiritualist and the materialist. It is the struggle between the theist and the atheist. It is the struggle, as we have so nicely seen in the puppet show previously, between the devotee and the demon. That's what we have here. Eternal. So Hiranyakashipu was a very, very powerful demon. The Leela, or the pastimes of Nrisimhadev and Prahlad, did not take place in the Kali Yuga. We are currently in Kali Yuga, the Iron Age of the four seasons of the universe. So it took place in an earlier age. I don't recall. It might have been Treta Yuga. Does anybody know for sure? Are you sure? It was an earlier Yuga. It wasn't Kali Yuga. And Hiranyakashipu and his brother Hiranyaksha were born from the womb of Diti. And Diti is the mother of all the demons, as her sister Aditi is the mother of all the gods. And during the original creation of the universe, of course, the universe is created over and over and over again, and it's wound up over and over and over again. So when you read these stories in the Puranas and in the Bhagavatam and Mahabharata, we're not quite sure which round of the creation necessarily they've taken place in, but the pastimes of Vishnu, of God, repeatedly take place, creation after creation. So Hiranyakashipu is the consummate materialist. He's the go-to guy for materialism. He's the consummate atheist. He knows there's Vishnu, but he doesn't think he's God. He's got a bit of a narcissistic problem here on Hiranyakashipu. He thinks he's God, in so many words. So the thing about the devotees or spiritualists is, you're a revolutionary. If you're a devotee, if you're a spiritualist by nature, if you become spiritual in your lifetime and you weren't raised that way, then you are a revolutionary. whether you like it or not. Thanks, Philip. You're a maverick. You're upsetting the status quo. The materials don't like that. They don't like that at all. Many of us have come from families who they might have been religious, maybe not religious, maybe not particularly spiritual. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about my life, a little bit of a personal story in a minute. And they just want you to be exactly the way they were. They want you to have the same goals, the same meaning of life, the same pursuits, which are sense gratification and have a nice family and get education and get a house and a car and the usual things which lead to death over and over and over again. Death. It all leads to death. Yet the soul doesn't want to die. So that never quite dawns on them. The disconnect never quite appears. So they will do anything to sustain their culture and their way of life. And you tell them, I reject. As a young man, 22 years old, I rejected it all. No thanks, don't want it anymore. Want to become spiritual. Want to follow my true purpose. Want to act like a soul. I don't want to act like a body anymore. I just don't want to absorb myself in material sense gratification and then say that that's the most important thing in life, because it isn't. And I wasn't a miserable person. Actually, I was a very successful person. But I wasn't happy, spiritually speaking. So materialists will go to any extremes to maintain their hold on their perception of life, their culture, their cultural perception. They'll go to any extreme. They'll stop at nothing. Like Hiranya Kashyapu. He's the consummate materialist. Hiranya means gold. Nowadays, ain't much gold. Somebody's sitting on it somewhere. So it means money. Kashyapu means soft bed. Well, that's a translation for sex. Money and sex. I mean, what else is there? Did I miss something? That's all you need, right? With money, you get sex. With more money, you get better sex. More sex. Isn't that what the billboards show you? Isn't that what the liquor ads show you? Isn't that what the clothing ads show you? Money and sex. So here's a guy whose name represents money and sex. Not only that, he upended the demigods. He's such a powerful being that he actually threw the demigods out of Svargaloka, threw them out of heaven. You're out of here. I'm here. Money, sex guy. So that's what happened. Prabhupada said, Namam Dushkritinor Mudha Prabhadyante Narama Mayaya Pratigyana Asuram Bhava Mashrita, that those miscreants who are grossly foolish, who are lowest among mankind, Narama, lowest among mankind, cling to a materialistic philosophy or outlook on life, no matter what. So the lowest of mankind is a what, according to Prabhupada, is an atheist. Someone who believes in no spiritual source or no spiritual control, or controller. And the highest is a theist, is someone who believes in God or has faith and knows there's a higher purpose or a higher motive behind it all. That's a theist. But there's a category that's higher yet, and that is a devotee. Why? Because a devotee is a lover of God. All right? If I tell you I believe in somebody's existence, I believe in this person, okay, you accept that. But if I tell you that I love this person, that's a whole different thing, isn't it? So a devotee just doesn't simply recognize God, but endeavors to enter into a loving, reciprocal relationship with God. A dynamic relationship. When? Once he's dead? No. Now. Right away. Immediately. It's available. It's a higher level. It's a higher standard. I became a devotee. The summer of 72, I read the Bhagavad Gita. And I had already had an awakening 3 years earlier. I already had a spiritual awakening. I'd been reading, studying, meditating, devouring everything I could find spiritually. And then I was living in a small city in Saskatchewan in Canada, kind of in the middle, flat prairies, called Regina. 150,000 people, pretty small, smaller than Dublin, smaller than Belfast. And I sent away for the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Came in the post. Thanks for that, Krishna. And I read it, and that was it. That was the game changer. It all changed. I read the Bhagavad Gita. My life has never been the same. And I'm very, very grateful for that. So, within a year, I had to extricate myself from my material entanglements and responsibilities. It took about a year. Very, very difficult thing to do because of what I had going on at that time. I was quite a successful musician. We were on the verge of our first recording contract. So I had to let all that go. I didn't have to. I did. Well, you know, that upset a lot of people. I was quite well known. And it certainly upset my parents. What on earth? What are you talking about? What are you doing? Are you nuts? Are you crazy? You've been working at this now since you were 8 years old, and now you are at the culmination point and you're walking away. What's wrong with you? Dark night of the soul. Hardest thing I ever had to do. But I had to do it. I had no choice. I had a choice. I had no choice. Because Krishna came. He said, okay. You wanted me, here I am. Now will you come? What will you do? What will you do to approach me now that I've approached you? What are you willing to give up? Something? Nothing? A little? A lot? I'll give up everything. That's why a lot of people told me, you're nuts. You're crazy. I don't know what's going on with you. You used to be so stable. You used to be so rational. Honey bowl. I was just as stable and rational. In fact, I was more rational than ever before. But materialists, I'm questioning their culture. I'm questioning everything. I'm walking away from it all. Right? So I couldn't join the temple in Regina. It was too small. I knew too many people. Would have been too hard. So my girlfriend at the time, she says, what are you going to do? I said, I'm moving to Toronto. Going to join the ashram. Live in the ashram, become a devotee of Krishna. She goes, well, what about me? I said, well, I can't tell you what to do. Well, I'm going. I said, okay, well, then let's go. And off we went in October of 1973, drove to Toronto. Now, Regina, Toronto's 2,000 miles away from Regina. Vancouver is 1,500 miles away from Regina. Oh, we were remote. All the major rock bands and big acts that used to come through Canada, they never came where we lived. We were remote. So, we're about a year forward. Maybe not even that long, and we went home for, I don't know, Christmas or some such thing. Can't quite remember. And my mother-in-law, ex-mother-in-law, God bless her, she's kind of a busybody. And, of course, her daughter was living in an ashram in Toronto, so, oh my God, what the heck happened here? So she says, hi, Drew, it's good to see you. I said, yeah, it's good to see you too, Ellis. We're wondering if you'd agree to do us a small favor. I said, yeah, sure. What do you need? If they want me to explain a verse of Bhagavad Gita or something, who knows, you know? Well, we're wondering if you wouldn't mind seeing a doctor while you're here. I said, oh, yeah. I'm feeling okay. We're wondering if you wouldn't mind seeing a psychiatrist while you're here. Oh, psychiatrist. Okay, so I'm physically okay, but mentally I'm on the edge. I must be. So, being gracious as sometimes I am, I said, yeah, why not? I'll go see the psychiatrist. She says, well, there's an appointment for you 9:00 Thursday morning. I said, well, perfect. I'll still be here Thursday. Yes, I know. So I went down to the clinic Thursday morning to see Dr. Patel. Dr. Patel from Gujarat. Indian man, Gujarati. Gujarat is on the west coast of India, for those of you who don't know. Gujaratis are great devotees of Krishna and Vishnu. They're pretty much all vegetarian. Why? Because Krishna built his capital, Dwarka, in Gujarat. Right? So, I walk in, there's Dr. Patel, greets me warmly, have a seat, he sits down. So he says, tell me a little bit about yourself. So I'm telling him, you know, I joined the ashram, I had an awakening, I had an epiphany, I read Bhagavad Gita. Oh, Bhagavad Gita. Wonderful. Yes, Dr. Patel, it is wonderful. It changed my life. So this is how it went. So for the next, well, it's not an hour. Psychiatrist is only 50 minutes. You know, you get 5-0 and that's, you're out. But for the next 50 minutes, Dr. Patel and I waxed lyrical on Bhagavad Gita and God consciousness. Well, I thought, geez, Krishna sent me to the right guy. And at the end, he said, time is up. It was a great pleasure to meet you. I said, it was a great pleasure to meet you too, doctor. It was my pleasure. Thank you so much. So I got up to leave. I walked to the door. I turned back. I looked at him. I said, "So? Well? Well, what? What's the diagnosis? Am I crazy or what?" "What? Go on. You're not crazy." Thank you. You see what lengths people will go to? I showed no symptoms of being crazy. I just used to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and, you know, take cold showers and start chanting rounds and worship the deity in the temple. Well, that's pretty mad, according to materialistic culture, but not according to yoga culture, not even according to Christian monk culture. That's not very crazy at all. All right? My mother, just a bit more of the story because it's kind of interesting. You may not know this. At that time, 1972, 73, 74, 75, there were many, because of the 60s, there was an explosion of consciousness taking place in our world at that time. Primarily, it started in California, and it, San Francisco, Summer of Love, etc., etc. It exploded from there, but it went worldwide. It pretty much went worldwide. And there were many spiritual gurus and leaders and, cults, groups, sects that were burgeoning everywhere. This was a sign of the times, because people were sincerely looking for spirituality. And there was a guy who emerged whose name was Ted Patrick. He was a black man from Texas. And he became known throughout North America as the deprogrammer. So when your child joined a cult and was brainwashed by their dogma, Ted Patrick and his minions, you could hire him for several thousand dollars. And he would kidnap devotees. Now, he'd do any cult. You know, if you had the money, he'd go. He'd kidnap the person, and then he'd take you to an undisclosed location, which is a motel room in the middle of nowhere, and then he would subject you to sleep deprivation, food deprivation, for a week or so, and he would harangue you and unbrainwash you. That's what he would do. Now, that in the very least can't be legal, because it's kidnapping. Especially if you're over 21 years old, right? But the parents paid for it, so it must be okay, you know? We want our child back to our materialistic culture. This was very common. I know many devotees who were kidnapped and brainwashed, disappeared for a month or two, and then they'd show up at the temple again. "Hari Bol." "Prabhu, how are you?" "Johnny, Krishna saved me." It wasn't always so simple and so happy an ending. It was very tragic. My mother hated Krishna. My mother hated Krishna so much she couldn't say the word Krishna. She could not say it. All she could say was Krishna. "You're going off with the Krishnas." I said, "It's Krishna, Mom." "Yeah, I know it's Krishna." Hated him. And my father, I never had one philosophical conversation in my life with my father. Not one. Not one. he was a nice man. He's a good man. But not wired for it. You know, me, I'm totally wired for it. But these are my adoptive parents. So I moved to L.A. I was blessed. Krishna sent me to L.A. because that's where I wanted to be, in Los Angeles, because I wanted to join the Sanskrit department and become a Sanskrit editor for Prabhupada's books. Well, that's exactly what happened. Krishna picked me up, plucked me up, and set me down in L.A. That decision was made within 48 hours I was in Los Angeles. My head was spinning. But there I was. And I called my mother one day, and she told me that she had been considering having me deprogrammed, kidnapped and deprogrammed by Ted Patrick. I said, "That's lovely, Mom. That's really good news. And are you going forward with that plan?" Or, no, I decided against it. It's quite costly, you know. Yeah, it's costly in more ways than you realize, Mom. I didn't talk to her for a year after that. Incommunicado. That's all I needed to hear. It wasn't just that, a couple other points. So I just cut it loose for a year and let the dust settle. Year's good, you know, four seasons. So that's what I came up against. That's only one person's story. You have stories too, some of you who are from the West and have become devotees, you got some good stories. And how much your family wonders what's going on, why are you doing this? Why are you persecuting us like this after all we did for you? That never changed with my family to the grave. Never changed. They're both passed on. God bless them. May Krishna bless them. So, materialists, what's the point of that? All this? Materialists will do anything to hang on to the material culture. They'll do anything. Can you remove the tambourine from the whatever's happening in the corner there, please? A little less tambourine would be helpful. Thank you. So, janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha doshang darshanam. You must come to recognize that life in the material world is janma mrityu jara vyadi, and it's dosha nudarshanam. You must see the dosha, the fault, the flaw in taking repeated birth, death, old age, disease. Oh yeah, that's normal. I know. You can find graveyards full of, don't you want a nice tombstone with your name on it and some nice little slogan at the bottom? Don't you want one of those? No! I don't. I've had one, I don't know how many thousands of times. I don't want another one. Well, obviously I might get one this time, I don't know, but it's not going to be in my will. No. You have to recognize what that means. And you have to recognize that that is not how the spirit soul is meant to live life. So, once you realize the evils of birth, death, old age, and disease, it will begin to change everything. If you think this world is a happy place and a place of joy, I don't mean you should walk around depressed and tormented. I simply mean you should see things as they are. So, what does Prabhupada say? He says, repeatedly, Na te vidu svartakating hivishnum. Na te vidu. They do not understand svarta gatim, the real purpose of life, the real goal of life, He Vishnum is Vishnu, is God. That's the goal of life. To go to the destination where God is present. To go to God. And if you do not realize that as being the Svartha, Gatim, the destination, then what? Then your values and your goals are materialistic. Correct? Okay. So, Hiranyakashipu, as we've seen, I don't have to tell as much of the story because it was nicely told in the puppet show. Hiranyakashipu was very upset because his brother, Hiranyaksha, Goldeneye, had been killed by Vishnu. So he wanted to get this Vishnu. But Vishnu, even though he didn't believe necessarily that Vishnu was God, he knew he was a pretty powerful character. Killed his brother. His brother was real powerful. So, I'm going to have to become immortal. That was his conclusion. And to that end, he went off and he did austerities for 1,000 years. Hands up in the air, standing on tiptoes for 1,000 years. So that he would get a boon from somebody, probably Brahma, the creator of the universe, or the diversity within the universe, that he would become immortal. That's what he did. He had already taken over Svargaloka. He had already driven out the gods and taken over, had the demons take over the heavenly realms. Okay. But that wasn't enough. So he did the austerities, he did the penances, as you saw in the show. Brahma appeared and he said, okay, you're starting to heat up the universe with all this fire that you're producing from your tapas, from your austerity. Alright? Tapas, tapa, tap, burning. Right? What do they call Radha? Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi. Tapta Kanchana. Molten gold. It's her complexion. Burnished gold. That's the positive side. So that's the same root. Tap. So he was scorching the universe. He said, oh, hang on a second. go put out that fire, Brahma. What's going on down there? And sure enough, it was Hiranyakashipu who had been reduced to a skeleton and still maintained his life force within the bones. That tells you something. It tells you you can maintain your life force within your bones. That's the first thing it tells you. Second thing it tells you is do not go home and try. So Brahma appeared and he said, okay, it's worked. You got my attention. What would you like? Sprinkled him with water from the Kamandalu, restored his body to its youth and vigor and strength, and wow, ready to go. I want immortality. That's what I want. Just one thing. I want immortality. Brahma says, well, well, that's going to be a tough one. Because I myself don't have immortality. How will I be able to give you something I don't have? Huh? Reasonable? I see. Okay. Well, Hiranyakashipu he's no dummy. He's not a stupid man. By any means. So what does he say? He says, oh my Lord, will kindly grant me this benediction, the following benediction. Let me not meet death from any of the living entities created by you. Grant me that I not die with any residents inside, outside, nighttime, daytime, animal, man, demigod, I can't be killed on the ground. I can't be killed in the air. I can't be killed in the water. I mean, he thought of everything. Thought of everything. Right? Can't be killed by snakes. And Brahma said, okay, I can do it. Well, Rani Kashyapu said, okay. Well, that's as good as immortality. Translates to immortality. Thanks, Brahma. Brahma goes off. In the meantime, the demigods have retaken the Swarga, the heavenly planets. So he went in and immediately cleaned house, tossed them back out of there, and made sure they were, that all the people and the Brahmins and everybody else weren't doing the yajnas, the sacrifices. So the gods weren't getting any portion of the sacrifices, because there weren't any. Did all that. Took over Indra's palace, Nandana Gardens. Very beautiful, very nice. Built by Vishvakarma, architect of the universe, architect of the gods. All Vastu principles, of course. And by this time, well, I'll give you all the details, but Prahlad came around. So Prahlad was born to Hiranyakashipu's queen, principal wife, and as you saw from the puppet show, Prahlad, actually, she went to live with Narada Muni, the sage, in his ashram while Hiranyakashipu was away doing austerities. So Prahlad, in the womb, was subject completely to transcendental knowledge and prayers and mantras and all the rest of this while he was in the womb. Which is also a good lesson for those of you ladies and gentlemen who have pregnancies. Once you know you're pregnant, immediately the cultivation of the child in the womb begins. It doesn't begin when the child comes out. It begins immediately. So that's why a peaceful state of mind and a spiritual state of mind during pregnancy are absolutely essential. And you read the Bhagavatam to your child and the Krishna book and whatever else you might want to do and chant. Very important. Very important. So, what happened because of all this? Well, a devotee was born in a demon family. I've never heard of that before. Oh, yes. How many of you are devotees born in demoniac or materialistic, shall we say, families? Many. It's common. That's why Hiranyakashipu was so damn frustrated. Because this guy was supposed to be my right-hand man. He's going to be the next big demon to come up my line. No. What's Prahlad mean? What's the word Prahlad mean?
Great bliss.
Great bliss. Joy, happiness, right? For what reason? For no reason. For no reason. Just cause he's connected to God. That's real happiness. It's not because you have a nice car. It's not because you have a nice house. It's just cause. It's joy without cause. Because you're connected to God. So Prahlad came, sent him to school with Shanda and Amarka, who were the sons of Shukracharya. Shukracharya is the chief priest of the demons, materialists. We use these words interchangeably, demons and materialists. they can be different in some ways. They can be the same in some ways. I'll explain that perhaps in a minute, because I'll never get through everything I wrote down on this piece of paper today. So, Prahlad's 5 years old. Hiranyakashipu sends for him up in the throne room there. And he's very pleased to see his son, brings him up on his lap. "Well, my boy," he says, "and you've learned many things from your teachers. Now please repeat whatever you think is the best of that knowledge that you've learned so far in school." What does Prahlad say? The most famous verse. "Shravanam kirtanam Vishnu, smaranam parasevanam, archanam vandanam dasyam, sakyam atmanivedanam." That's what I've learned. And then that, at the end of the next verse, he says, "Tanmanye ditam uttamam." Tanmanye, I believe that this, aditam uttamam, is the supreme knowledge, the most important thing I've learned. Shravanam. This is what you're doing right this minute. Shravanam, you're listening. Hopefully. You're hearing about spiritual subject matters. Kirtanam, chanting. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm doing kirtanam. You're doing shravanam. When we chant together, we do kirtanam. Vishnu. Of Vishnu. Smaranam. Remembering. Remembering God. These are the 9 processes of bhakti, of devotional service, of connecting to God. These are the 9 methods. Smaranam. Remembering God throughout the day. What, when you're in the temple? No. Anytime. Driving up the dual carriageway. Padasevanam. Serving the lotus feet of God. Seva, service. Smaranam padasevanam. Archanam. You see the altar? You see how beautiful it is? Archanam means worshipping the deity on the altar. Now, you can walk in here and you may never have seen a deity before in your life. You may never have been to the temple. But I'll tell you, when you walk through the door and you look at the altar, you go, "Oh my God. What is that? I've never seen that before." For me, it's better than somebody on a cross. But that's just me. I find this far more attractive as an expression of godliness than somebody suffering nailed to a cross. For me. So, there's the beauty of archanam. Vandanam, prayers. Saying prayers. Many of us were taught to pray when we were children. Just pray from your heart. Sometimes devotees say, "It's Sanskrit. You don't have to pray in Sanskrit if you don't want to. Just pray to God from your heart. That's all." Dasyam, service. You come to the temple. Maybe you have a job outside. You have your own life. So if you come on Sunday, maybe you give a donation. Fine. Maybe you ask Gopalacharya, "What can I do? Is there something I can do? How can I serve here? I want to do some service." Okay. I'll find something for you. He'll find something for you. I guarantee you. And if you're in Dublin, I'm Maheshwar, I'll find something for you. It's always something to do. Sakyam. Befriending God. Does God, you think God wants you to walk around in fear? Of God, hellfire and brimstone? He's going to throw the thunderbolt down on your head any minute now. Is that what you think? No. What is Krishna saying in Bhagavad Gita? Suridam Sarvabhutana. I am your friend. I'm the friend of Sarvabhuta, all living beings. I am the supreme friend. What do you think he means? That's exactly what he means. Why don't you just become my friend? Don't you like being with your friends? You're familiar, you're comfortable, you make joke, you crack jokes. Krishna and Arjuna used to crack jokes all the time. What do you think why do you think you enjoy cracking jokes? Because Krishna does. Because we are God-like. We humans. We like doing stuff God likes to do. Yeah? So, Sakyam Atma Nivedana. Oh, that's a big one. Surrender, total surrender of the Atma, of the Self. Oh, that sounds scary to me. Let me tell you, that is scary business. What will become of me? What do you think happened? What do you think I was thinking when I drove down to Toronto? What will become of me now? What if it doesn't work? I'm gone. I can't go back there with my tail between my legs. No, well, you could, but no. You know? Throw yourself in. No, I'm not. Living in the ashram is not for everybody. It's not for everybody, to be honest. You know? It's pretty intense. It's pretty intense. But I'll tell you, you will go through purification and character dismantling and character rebuilding faster than any kind of course you might take from any self-help guru that you can find out there. Believe me. But it's not for everybody. Okay? So, surrendering the self. That's where we want to get to. Ultimately. So, once Hiranyakashipu heard this news, he threw Prahlad, the 5-year-old boy, onto the stone floor. Heaved him right off his lap. What is this nonsense? What's he talking about? Well, what was his flaw? What was his fault? Oh, he was God conscious. That was his fault. What was my fault? I became God conscious with my family. That was my fault. Shouldn't have done that. So, he called the teachers in and he gave them a dressing down. They said, but my Lord, we did not teach him any of this. We taught him none of this. Which they didn't. Because they were teaching him politics. Because he was the prince regent. And politics, as Prabhupada points out, is the science of friends and enemies. It's the science of friends and enemies. How do they say? Keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer. That's what he taught. That's what they were taught. They didn't take with Prahlad. Didn't take to him. Why? Because of all that influence while he was in the womb. That's why. So, Prabhupada points out that materialists never want to go back home, back to Godhead. They're not interested. And we, at the most, are very torn. In some ways, we want to become God conscious. In other ways, well, I think the match is on this afternoon. I better go watch that because, you know, it's my favorite team. For example. You know, we're torn. Honestly. Prabhupada points out that Krishna is far more anxious for you to go back home to Godhead than you are anxious to go. Krishna is far more anxious. And he's far more patient because he's been waiting. He's been sitting there in your heart as Paramatma, the Super Soul, for how long? For every single birth you have passed in any species you have been in, God is in the heart, along with the Atma, with your soul. What's he doing there? Waiting. Watching. Whispering now and then to you. Where'd that come from? That's your conscience. Okay, I'm not listening to that because this is better. Yeah, right. You ever done that before? Okay. So, sometimes materialists say, or demons say, where is this God? If there is a God, where's your God? Let's say him. Prove it to me. Give me concrete scientific proof. That's what I need. That's what I want. And Prabhupada explains, well, you need a qualification to see God. You need a qualification. What's your qualification? You don't think God's going to appear to anybody and everybody? Why don't you go see the Taoiseach or the President? Go. You can't. There's a screening system in place. Not anybody can go. So you got to have a qualification. Then Prabhupada points out, even to see Krishna in the temple, you need a qualification. There's one simple qualification. See Krishna here, Radha Govinda, in the temple. What is that qualification? Do you know? Can a Muslim come in here? Of course. Catholic, a Jew, a Christian, a Hindu, doesn't matter. Buddhist, you're welcome. We don't keep anybody out, no? But there's one qualification. What is it? It happens at the door, front door. What is it? You got to take off your shoes. Or you can't get in. They actually won't let you in if you don't take your shoes off. And if you don't agree, you don't get in. So there's some qualification, even to see the deity. Prabhupada points it out. I never thought of it, but it's a good one. It's a good one. So, if God does not appear to the materialists, he does appear eventually. Mrityu sarva harashchaham, in the form of death. He comes as irrepressible death. What's he say? That's 10th chapter. 11th chapter. Time I am, destroyer of the worlds, and I've come to engage all men. You don't believe in God? Beep, 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 beep. That's your time up. That's it. Point of death. And there's Yamaraj, Lord of Death, up in his realm. Yamadutas, those are his messengers. Can you run down there to Enniskillen? Pick up Mr. Arak. Bring him back. Enniskillen? Yeah, okay. Go down. Bring this soul back here, because I've got to ask him a few questions. God comes in the form of death. or he comes in the form of liberation, if you're a spiritual person, or he comes in the form of your most loving relationship, if you're a devotee. I waited so long for you. You know how many lifetimes I waited for you to come? And now you've come. You've passed all the qualifications, all of the tests, all the trials, all the tribulations. You passed them all. I'm so, so happy to have you back. I missed you so much. But weren't you in my heart the whole time? Yeah, but you know, you were distracted. Yeah, well, you can say that again, Krishna. I was distracted. Big time. Prabhupada says, Kaunteya pratijanihi. Krishna says, Name bhakta pranashyati. Declare it boldly, O Arjuna. My devotee will never perish. Will never perish. If you spend only a small amount of time in this lifetime practicing yoga, bhakti yoga, worshiping God, trying to develop your relationship with God, trying to develop your spirituality, all of that will never perish. It will follow you all your days, in no matter what life. Krishna will not forget it. It will not be dismissed. It will not be treated lightly. It's extremely important for you to remember. You say, oh, well, you know, I was really in the fire for a while and then I fell down and this happened and that. Krishna doesn't really care about all that other stuff. Yeah, Krishna's going to be disappointed with me. No. Krishna is not interested in what you don't do for Krishna. He's not interested. He doesn't honestly pay attention to that. He only pays attention to what you do for him, with him, because of him, with him in mind. Because that's love, isn't it? Isn't that love? That's all he's interested in. He's interested in your love. He knows you get distracted and diverted and you get into your old nonsense. You think he doesn't know that? He knows it better than you. In fact, he knows when it's going to happen before you do. Does he interfere? He doesn't. Why doesn't he interfere? Because he loves you. He lets you do what you want to do. It's called free will. What a concept. Free will. You know, oftentimes I read this morning, newspaper. Well, how come a God who is so compassionate and so, how did he let all this happen? Well, that person, God bless them, has about this much spiritual understanding. About that much. Doesn't understand. If you don't understand karma, action and reaction, if you don't understand reincarnation, good luck. Because without those two concepts, you won't really understand how spirituality works. You will not. Okay. All right. So, what happened? He couldn't get Prahlad to reform. So, Hiranyakashipu made this statement. He said, I cannot control him. That's what he said. Because demons, what are demons into? Control, manipulation, intimidation, and deceit. Materialists and demons, they like control, manipulation, intimidation, and deceit. Is that not exactly what Hiranyakashipu was trying to do with his son? Well, he's supposed to control him. He's his father. Yeah. Is he supposed to have him killed? Is that what people who love you do? Do they use control, manipulation, intimidation, and deceit on you? Well, yeah, they do, but she does it because she loves me. No, sorry. There's a disconnect there. So then he had him, as you know, stabbed with tridents and crushed by elephants and boiled in oil. And Prabhupada said on one lecture, he says, don't go home and try this experiment of boiling yourself in oil. He said, one should not imitate the great acharyas. One must follow, but not imitate. So don't do that one at home either. Conjured up illusory tricks, fed him poison, starved him, exposed him to severe winds, tried to set him on fire, attempted to drown him, and crushed his body under heavy rocks. What happened? Nothing happened to little 5-year-old Prahlad. He survived it all. Was he afraid? No. He was fixed. His mind was fixed on Vishnu, on God. And he had Atma Nivedana. He totally, completely surrendered himself to God. That's what happened. Right? And because he did that, he became, virtually, his father looked at him and said, the kid's immortal!
Correct.
Exactly what the father wanted and had to do all these permutations and manipulations to achieve, the son had. Having surrendered himself to Vishnu. Wow. Is there not a lesson in that someplace? He had it, and his father didn't. So finally, he didn't know what to do with him. He sent him back to school to be re-educated, to be deprogrammed.
But Ted Patrick.
To be re-informed, re-educated, like many of us back in the 70s were subject to. But it doesn't always take, does it? It doesn't always work. And it did not work on Prahlad. So finally, he was fed up and he said, that's it. I'm going to kill this kid myself. I can't stand it anymore. He drew out his sword and he was going to sever the head of the child. He says, now what will you do? Where is this God of yours now that I'm about to cut your head off? You little so-and-so. And he said, well, Father, he's everywhere. He's Vishnu. He's everywhere. That's what Vishnu means. All-pervading. Is he in that pillar over there? Yeah. Well, he's in the pillar. Why not? So he went over to the pillar, and with his big, powerful fist, he smashed the pillar. The pillar broke open, and it was a sound like the crack of the covering of the universe. That's how it's explained in the Bhagavatam. And out came... Oh, let me do this proper for you. That is the Singhasan pose in yoga. Right? That's actually the Singhasan pose, named after Nrsingadev. Crossed eyes, tongue out. I added the hands. Lord Nrsingadev appeared. why would God appear in such an unusual form, half man, half lion?
Well, you heard the list. You heard the boon. Well, you know, here's Krishna up here. Just imagine, Brahma's, Hiranyakashipu is reciting his list of things he wants so he can become immortal, invincible, right? And Brahma's going, and Krishna's going inside their heart. He's going like, God, what is he going to, are you going to give him all that? I'm really going to have to pull something off here to get around all of these stipulations. How am I going to do that? Ah. You know, Krishna, it's a nanosecond before the answer comes. With us, sometimes a little longer. Ah, I know. Half man, half lion. I love it. There he comes. Half man, half lion. Right? So, what was that? Was it daytime? No. It was twilight. It was the juncture between day and night. Was he indoors? Not exactly, because there were no walls. There were only pillars. So he was indoors, but he was outdoors. So he's neither indoors nor outdoors. Right? And was he on the ground? No. Narasingadev picked him up and put him on his lap. Was he on the ground? No. Was he in the air? No. Was he in the water? No. He wasn't. Was it a man? No. Was it an animal? No. Half man, half animal. God. None of your creatures, none of your creations, he said to Brahma. Well, Brahma didn't make them. Every single stipulation has been fulfilled. Now, if that's not a mind blower, go home and dream one up like this. You talk about superheroes. This is the original superhero. Krishna, Narasingadev, these boys. And Tavakara Kamalavarena Kamadut Sringam Dalita Hiranyakashipu Tanubringam Keshavadrita Nara Hari Rupa with the nails. How did he kill him with a weapon? No. No weapons known to man. Nails. That's how he did it. Pretty amazing. Why? Why did he do that? To impress you? No. Not to impress you. We're impressed. That's not why he did it. He did it out of love. That's why he did it. Because he loved Prahlad so much. Think about it. What will Krishna do to protect you? What lengths will God go to look after you when you surrender to God, when you give him your heart? What lengths? What becomes impossible for you in that situation? Nothing, my friends. Nothing. And that story is a beautiful, beautiful example of what Krishna, how far Krishna will go for you. How far God will go. You take, how many times has Prabhupada said, you take 10 steps toward Krishna, he'll take 100 steps toward you. So we're happy you're all here today. Thank you for coming. Please take a few more steps today. Get a little bit closer. I think Gopal is going to serve the feast soon. Correct? So do you have... thank you for listening. Thank you for being attentive. Are there any questions?
sometimes, you know, had Prabhupada did not submit all night, don't you think we'll be equally stubborn as any other person? Like, we were lucky enough to get Prabhupada.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think so. I have prayed for him. It just came to me.
Well, Prabhupada points out that when you are ready, it will come to you. I read the Bhagavad Gita in 1972 in the summer, as I told you, right? And I said, how am I going? I'm in the middle of nowhere where I was living. How am I going to become God conscious? How am I going to get close to Krishna? I don't live in any of those cities where they have temples and there's no devotees. What am I going to do, right? So one year later, I'm walking downtown in the city center, and on the corner of one of the main streets are two devotees standing there dressed like Prabhu here, saffron robes, Ayodhyapati and Balakrishna Prabhus, who became good friends of mine. I was gobsmacked. There they are. They arrived in their big blue bus. And you know what I like to think they arrived? Because Krishna sent them. Because I really, really, really wanted him. And that's why Prabhupada came to you, whether you realize it or not. That's Krishna's mercy. Okay. Jai Nrisingadeva. Hari Bol, Hari Bol.